tighter grip on the scruff of the chief steward's neck. Mag spat and cursed, while the bard shook him furiously.
"Your trained spider is my prisoner," Fluda cried. "He and I have business together, long unsettled. Do you want him back unsquashed? Then let the Princess Ilanwe come with us."
"I have no need to bargain," Akran answered. She made a curt gesture to Ilanwe. The girl's face, Taran saw, had taken on a harsh and severe expression. She lifted her arm, hand outstretched and fingers pointing. "Which shall it be?" mused Akran. "The ill-favored creature who dared call himself your servant?" Gergi raised his head, puzzled and fearful, while Akran whispered words in a strange language to Ilanwe. The girl's fingers moved slightly. Gergi's eyes widened in surprise and disbelief. For an instant, he stood unmoving and open-mouthed, staring at the princess. Her hand pointing straight at the baffled Gergi suddenly tensed. With a sharp cry of pain, Gergi stiffened and clutched his head. Akran's eyes glittered with pleasure. Again she whispered urgently to Ilanwe. Gergi shrieked. He spun frantically, his arms flailing as though to ward off unseen tormentors. Screaming, he flung himself to the ground, doubled up, and rolled back and forth. Taran and Gwydion raced to his side, but the tortured creature, like a wounded animal, struck at them and thrashed blindly in agony. Fluda leapt to his feet.
"No more," he shouted. "Harm Gergi no longer. You shall have Mag. Take him."
At Akran's command, Ilanwe dropped her hand to her side. Gergi lay gasping on the stones. His body shook with sobbing. He raised his shaggy, disheveled head, and Taran saw his face streaming with tears that came not only from the suffering he had just undergone. Painfully, the exhausted creature drew himself up to crouch on hands and knees. Gergi crept forward a little. His weeping eyes turned to Ilanwe.
"Wise princess," he murmured, "it is no wish of hers to fill poor tender head with harmful hurtings. Gergi knows this. He forgives her."
Mag, meantime finding himself free of the bard's grasp, lost no time in scrambling to his feet and scuttling to the side of Akran. His encounter with Fluda had left the chief steward much the worse for wear. His handsome garments showed rips and rents, his lank hair fell damply over his forehead, his chain of office was bent and battered. Nevertheless, once near Akran, Mag folded his arms and haughtily threw back his head. Rage and hatred filled his eyes, and Taran was certain that had Akran given him the power, Mag's glance alone would have sufficed to send Fluda rolling in torments sharper than Gergi's.
"You shall pay dearly for this, Harper," Mag spat. "I rejoice that I did not have you thrashed and driven away when first I laid eyes on you, for now it allows me to hang you in your own harp-strings from the highest tower of Rudlam's castle, and so shall I do once I am Lord of Dinas Ridnant."
"Lord of Dinas Ridnant?" Fluda exclaimed. "A steward's chain is too much honor for you."
"Tremble, Harper," sneered Mag. "Dinas Ridnant is mine. It has been promised me, and all the realm. King Mag, Mag the Magnificent."
"King Mag the Maggot," the bard flung back at him. "Does Akran promise you a kingdom? A scullery would be more than you deserve."
"Akran's promises are false," cried Taran. "Learn this to your grief, Mag." The black-robed queen smiled. "Akran knows how to reward those who serve her, as she knows how to punish those who defy her. Mag's kingdom shall stand among the mightiest in the land, and Caer Kallur shall rise more glorious than ever. Its great hall shall be the seat of power over all Prydain. The Lord of Anuvin himself shall kneel in homage to me." Akran's voice fell nearly to a whisper. A cold fire burned over her pale features. Her eyes were no longer on the companions, but far beyond them. "Aron of Anuvin shall cower and beg for mercy, but his throne shall be toppled. It was I, Akran, who showed him the secret ways to power. He betrayed me, and now he shall suffer my vengeance. It was I who ruled Prydain before him, and none dared question my dominion. Thus shall it be once more. Thus shall it be evermore.
The law tells of your ancient rule, Gwydion said sharply, and how you sought to keep hearts and minds in thrall to you. You tormented those who would not worship you, and for those who bowed to you, life was little better than a slow death. I know, too, of the blood sacrifices you demanded, and your joy at the cries of your victims. No, Akron, it shall not come again. Think you this girl shall lead you to it?
She will obey me, Akron replied, as surely as if I held her beating heart in my hand.
Gwydion's eyes flashed. Your words are vain, Akron. They cannot deceive me. Do you seek to rule through the Princess Ailanwy? The enchantments she commands still sleep. You have not the means to waken them.
Akron's face turned livid, and she drew back as though she had been struck. You speak beyond your knowledge.
Oh, no, he doesn't,
burst out Rune, who had been listening in amazement. The Prince of Mona triumphantly faced Akron.
The book, the golden light, we've got them, and we shall never give them up.
Chapter 18 The Golden Peladrin.
Prince Rune, be silent!
Taran's warning came too late. Rune himself realized his blunder and clapped a hand to his mouth. His round face filled with dismay, and he glanced about him in confusion. Gwydion stood silently, his weathered features tight and pale. Yet the glance he cast on the unhappy Prince of Mona was not of reproach, but of sorrow. Prince Rune's shoulders drooped. He bowed his head and turned wretchedly away. Before Rune's outburst, while Gwydion had been speaking, Taran had sensed a shadow of fear over Akron. It had passed now, and her lips parted in a subtle smile.
"Do you think I wish to hide the truth from you, Lord Gwydion?" she said. "I knew the Book of Spells had vanished from Caer Calor, and I have long sought it. The golden peladrin was cast away or lost by the princess herself. Indeed, to fulfill my plan, only these objects are lacking. Accept my thanks, Lord Gwydion," Akron went on. "You spare me the labor of a tedious search. Spare yourself much pain by putting them in my hands.
Now," she commanded harshly, "give them to me."
Gwydion's voice was firm, and his words came slowly and carefully.
"It is as the Prince of Mona says. We have found the Book of Spells, and the light that reveals them. But it is also as he says. You shall never have them."
"Shall I not?" replied Akron. "It is as simple as reaching out."
"They are not in our possession," Gwydion answered, "but well hidden and beyond your grasp."
"That, too, is easily righted," said Akron. "There are means that will cause tongues to be loosened, and the deepest secret shouted aloud."
She glanced at Prince Rune.
"The Prince of Mona speaks even without my urging. He shall speak again."
Rune blinked and swallowed hard, but he faced Akron stoutly.
"If you're thinking about torturing me," he said, "you're welcome to try it. It would be interesting to see how much you could find out, since I myself haven't the first idea where the peladrin is."
He took a deep breath and shut his eyes tightly.
"So there you are. Go ahead."
"Give the harper to me, Lady Akron," Mag said eagerly, while Fluda bristled and stared defiantly at him. "He shall sing better to my music than ever he sang with his harp."
"Hold your tongue, Chief Steward," Akron snapped. "They shall speak willingly enough before I have done with them."
Gwydion's hand went to the hilt of the black sword.
"Harm none of my companions," he cried. "Do so, and I vow to strike you down whatever the cost."
"Thus do I vow," Akron flung back. "Seek to defeat me, and the girl shall die."
Her voice lowered.
"And so we stand, Gwydion, life against life, and death against death Which shall you choose? If they have taken my bauble, said Ailanwy, drawing closer to Akron, they must return it. It is not fitting for it to remain in the hands of strangers.
Taran could not hold back a cry of sorrow at Alanwi's words. Akron, who had been studying the face of each companion, turned quickly to him.
This does not please you, assistant pig-keeper, she murmured. It pains you to be called stranger by her. It cuts more cruelly than a knife, does it not? Sharper even than the torments of the wretched creature at your feet. She will remain thus, because I so command it. Yet I could give back her memory of you. Is a golden trinket too high a price? Or a book of spells that are meaningless to you?
Akron drew closer to Taran, fixing him with her eyes. Her voice had dropped to a whisper, her words, seeming to reach him alone, twined around his heart.
What cares an assistant pig-keeper, whether I or another hold sway over Prydaine? Lord Gwydion himself cannot gain for you what you hold dearest. Indeed, he can bring about only her death. But I can give you her life. Yes, a gift only I can bestow. And more, much more, Akron whispered, with me, the Princess Ailanwy shall be a queen. But who shall be her king? Would you have me set her free to wed a witless prince? Yes, Mag has told me she is to be given to the son of Rudlam. What then shall be the lot of an assistant pig-keeper? To win a princess only to lose her to another? Are these not your thoughts, Taran of Caer Dalban? Think of this, too, that Akron gives favour for favour.
Akron's eyes pierced him like dagger points, and Taran's head whirled. Half sobbing, he tried in vain to stop his ears against the whispered words, and buried his face in his hands.
Speak now, Akron's voice went on. The golden peladrin, its hiding place.
You shall have what you ask.
For an instant, Taran thought it was his own voice crying out beyond his will to silence. Then he gaped in disbelief. The words had come from Gwydion. The Prince of Dawn stood with his wolf-grey head flung back, his eyes blazing, and on his face a look of wrath, such as Taran had never seen before. The warrior's voice rang harsh and cold through the great hall, terrible to hear, and Taran trembled at the sound of it. Akron started in a sudden movement.
"You shall have what you ask," Gwydion cried again. "The golden peladrin and the book of spells are buried at the broken wall near the gate, where I myself set them."
Akron was silent a moment, then her eyes narrowed.
"Do you lie to me, Gwydion?" she murmured through clenched teeth. "If it is not true, the Princess Ailanwy will not live beyond this instant."
They are within your reach, Gwydion replied. Shall you hold back from taking them?
Akron made a curt gesture to Mag.
Fetch them, she ordered.
The chief steward hastened from the hall, and Akron turned once more to Gwydion.
Beware, Prince of Dawn, she said in a hoarse whisper. Touch not your sword. Make no move toward us.
Gwydion did not answer. Taran and the companion stood motionless and speechless. Mag had returned to the great hall. His sallow face twitched with excitement as he triumphantly bore aloft the golden peladrin. Breathless, he ran to Akron's side.
"So it is," he cried. "They are ours!"
Akron snatched the objects from him. The golden sphere was dull as lead, its beauty gone. She held it avidly. Her eyes glittered, and her smile showed the white tips of her sharp teeth. For a moment she stood as though reluctant to part with the treasures she had sought, then pressed them into Ailanwy's hands. Mag was beside himself with impatience and eagerness. He gripped his silver chain with clawed fingers, while his cheeks trembled and greed lit his beady eyes.
"My kingdom!" he cried, in a tight, high-pitched voice. "Mine! It shall soon be mine!"
Akron spun and faced him scornfully.
"Silence! A kingdom, groveling fool! Be grateful if you are allowed to keep your life!"
Mag's jaw dropped, and his face turned the color of moldy cheese at the import of Akron's words. Choking as much with terror as with rage, he cowered under Akron's threatening glance. The Book of Spells lay open in Ilanwi's outstretched hand. She had taken the golden peladrin and was looking at it curiously. In the depths of the golden sphere, a tiny light like a whirling, blazing snowflake had begun to take shape. She frowned, and a strange expression came over her face. As Taran watched, horror-stricken, Ilanwi shuddered violently, her head flung from one side to the other, as though in pain. For an instant, her eyes opened wide, and she appeared about to speak. Her voice was no more than a gasp, yet in that fleeting moment it seemed to Taran she had regained some vague memory of herself. Was it his own name she had tried hopelessly to cry out? The girl swayed as if torn between mighty forces that stormed within her.
"Read out the spells," Akron ordered.
Little by little, the light of the golden peladrin grew brighter. Throughout the great hall rose a faint, confused whispering, as though the wind had gained tongue, urging, cajoling, commanding. The very stones of Caer Calor seemed to have taken voice.
"Quickly! Quickly!" cried Akron.
Ilanwi, Taran realized in a surge of hope, was struggling against all that held her. The anguished girl was beyond all threats of Akron, beyond all help from the companions. Then, suddenly, her lonely combat ended. Taran cried out in despair as Ilanwi raised the glowing sphere and in a quick motion brought it close to the empty pages. The golden peladrin flared brighter than he had ever seen it, and Taran flung up his hand to shield his eyes. Light flooded the hall. Gergi threw himself to the ground and covered his head with his shaggy arms. The companions drew back fearfully. Suddenly, Ilanwi cast the book to the flagstones. From the pages burst a crimson cloud that spread into a sheet of fire, leaping upward to the vaulted ceiling of the great hall. Even as the Book of Spells consumed itself in its own flames, the blaze did not dwindle but instead rose ever higher, roaring and crackling, no longer crimson, but blindingly white. The shriveled pages swirled in a fiery whirlwind to dance within the shimmering heart of the flame, and as they did, the whispering voices of Caer Calor groaned in defeat. The scarlet curtains of the alcove blew outward, seized in the writhing column of fire. Now the book had vanished utterly, but still the flames mounted, unappeased. Akron was shrieking, shrieking in rage and frenzy, her face distorted with hopeless fury. Still clutching the golden peladrin, Ilanwi crumpled and fell. Chapter 19. The Flood. Gwydion leapt forward.
"Your power is ended, Akron," he cried.
The livid queen staggered for an instant, then turned and fled screaming from the great hall. Taran raced to Ilanwi's side and, heedless of the flames, struggled to raise the girl's limp body. Gwydion sped to overtake Akron. The bard followed them, his sword drawn. Mag had vanished. Gergi and Prince Rune hastened to aid Taran. Within moments Fluda returned. His face was ashen.
"The spider tries to drown us," he shouted. "Mag has opened the gates to the sea."
As the bard called out, Taran heard a thunder of surf. Caer Calor trembled. Shouldering the unconscious Ilanwi, he stumbled through a ruined casement. Kor circled frantically above the towers. Fluda was urging the companions toward the portals, where they might hope to gain the boat. Taran followed him only to see in despair the great iron-bound gates nearly ripped from their hinges by the pounding water. Shattered, they had swung inward, and the foaming tide rushed upon the island like a ravening beast. Beyond the walls, at the crest of a driving wave, rode Akron's vessel, mask askew and sails flapping. The surviving warriors clung to the sides of the tossing craft and fought to climb aboard. At the bow stood Mag, his face contorted with hate, shaking his fist
at the crumbling fortress. The wreckage of Gwydion's boat spun in the flood, and Taran knew all means of escape were shattered with it. The outer walls crumbled under the first impact of the sea. Blocks of stone shuddered and split away. The towers of Caer Calor swayed, and the ground reeled under Taran's feet. Gwydion's voice rang above the tumult.
"Save yourselves! Caer Calor is destroyed! Jump clear of the walls, or they will crush you!"
Taran saw that the Prince of Don had clambered to the highest rocks of the embankment to which Akron had fled. There, Gwydion strove to lead her from the collapsing stones, but she struck at him and clawed his face. Her shrieks and curses pierced the rumble of unrushing waves. Gwydion faltered and fell as the embankment gave way. The last barrier of ruined wall toppled. A hissing sheet of water blotted out the sky. Taran clasped Ailanwy to him. The flood swept them away and bore them under. Salt foam choked him, and the merciless buffeting of the tide nearly tore the unconscious girl from his arms. He struggled upward while the island split and sank in a whirlpool that clutched him. Gripping Ailanwy, Taran fought clear of the whirlpool, only to fall prey to breakers tossing him like wild stallions. He spun to the trough of the waves while the sea pounded strength and breath from him. Still he was able to hope, for it seemed the white-crested breakers were bearing him and his frail burden closer to shore. Dizzied and half-blinded by the green-black waves, Taran caught a confused glimpse of beach and shallow surf. He struck out weakly with his free arm, but in this last effort his failing body betrayed him, and he tumbled into darkness. Taran awoke under a grey sky. The roaring in his ears was not the surf. Two enormous yellow eyes peered into his own. The roaring grew louder. Hot breath was on his face. As Taran's sight cleared, he saw sharp teeth and a pair of tufted ears. He realized in confusion that he was lying flat on his back, and Lian was standing over him with one huge padded paw on his chest. He cried out in alarm and struggled to free himself.
"Hello! Hello!"
Prince Roon was now bending over him, a wide grin on his round face. Beside him was Fluda. The bard, like Roon, was soaked and bedraggled, and strands of dripping seaweed hung from his yellow hair.
"Steady now," said Fluda. "Lian means you no harm. She only wants to be friendly, though sometimes she has odd ways of showing it."
He patted the cat's great head and scratched under her mighty jaws.
"Come, Lian," he coaxed. "There's a good girl. Don't stand on my friend. He's not up to it yet. Behave yourself and I'll play you a tune as soon as my harp string's dry."
Fluda turned once more to Taran.
"We have to thank Lian for a great deal. Everything, in fact. She fished us all out of the surf after the sea had washed us up. If she hadn't, I'm afraid we should still be there."
"It was really surprising," put in Prince Roon. "I thought for certain I'd been drowned, and the curious thing was, I couldn't notice any difference."
"I did have a start when I came to my senses with Lian sitting beside me," said Fluda. "She had my harp between her paws, as though she couldn't wait for me to wake up and begin again. The creature is mad about my music. That's why she tracked us all the way here, and, Great Belin, I'm glad she did. But I think she's finally understood there's a time and place for everything. She's really been quite gentle," he added, as Lian began to rub her head against him with such vigor the bard could hardly keep his balance.
"Where are the others?" Taran interrupted anxiously.
"Kor, I fear, is nowhere to be found. Gergi's gone looking for driftwood to build a fire," replied the bard. "Poor creature, he's still terrified of Lian. But he'll get used to her. I've grown quite fond of her myself. It's not often one finds such a good listener, and I think I shall keep her. Or," he added while Lian nuzzled her whiskers on his neck and gripped the bard with her powerful paws, "perhaps I should put it the other way around."
"What of Ailanwy, of Gwydion?" Taran pressed. The bard's glance fell.
"Yes, well," he murmured, "they're here. Gwydion has done all he can."
With mounting anxiety, Taran rose unsteadily to his feet. In the lee of a tumble of rock, Gwydion knelt beside two forms. Taran stumbled across the beach. Gwydion looked up at him, his face filled with concern.
"Ailanwy lives," he said,
answering the question in Taran's eyes.
"More than that, I cannot say. This much I know. Akran no longer holds her."
Akran is dead, then?" Taran asked. He stared at the black, shrouded figure.
"Akran, too, lives," answered Gwydion, "though long she hung between life and death. But her power is broken now. This is the answer to the riddle, yet I did not know it until I stood before her in the great hall. At first, I was not certain. When I understood that she would truly let herself go down to death before giving up Ailanwy, I knew she had lost command of all but the least of her own enchantments. I read it in her eyes and in her voice. Her day had begun to wane from the moment she had broken with the Lord of Anuvin. The spells of Caer Calor were her last hope. Now they are gone, and Caer Calor lies at the bottom of the sea," Gwydion added. "We need fear Akran no longer."
"I fear her still," Taran said, "and I shall not forget Caer Calor." "Akran spoke the truth to me," he went on quietly. "I had not the strength to listen to her any more. I feared I would tell the hiding place of the Peladrin, and hoped you would slay me before I did." "Yet," Taran added, puzzled, "it was you yourself who spoke."
"It was a risk that had to be taken," Gwydion replied. "I had suspected something of the nature of the bauble. As it alone could reveal the spells, so it alone could destroy them. Only then could Ailanwy be free. At what cost to herself, I could not be sure. Alas, she has suffered deeply and grievously, perhaps too much."
"Dare we waken her?" Taran whispered.
"Touch her not," said Gwydion. "She must waken of herself. We can only wait and hope."
Taran bowed his head. "I would have given my life to keep her from harm, and I would give it now to spare her this." He smiled bitterly.
"Akran asked what shall be the lot of an assistant pig-keeper. It is a question I have often asked myself. I see now the life of an assistant pig-keeper is of little use or import. Even to offer it for someone else is of no avail."
"Prince Roon would gainsay you," Gwydion answered. "Without you, he would have wandered lost and in mortal danger."
"I swore an oath to King Rudlam," Taran replied. "I did not break it."
"And had you not sworn an oath," Gwydion asked, "would you not have done the same?"
Taran was silent for a while, then he nodded. "Yes, I believe I would. It was more than my oath that bound me. He needed my help, as I needed his." He turned to Gwydion. "I remember, too, when a prince of Don aided a foolish assistant pig-keeper. Is it not fitting now for the pig-keeper to aid a prince?"
"Whether it be prince or pig-keeper," said Gwydion, "such is the way of a man. The destinies of men are woven one with the other, and you can turn aside from them no more than you can turn aside from your own."
"And you, Lord Gwydion," came Akran's voice, "you have put a cruel destiny upon me."
The black-cloaked figure had risen. Akran clung to the rocks to bear herself up. Her face, half-hooded, was drawn and haggard, and her lips were pale.
"Death would have been a kindness. Why did you deny it to me?"
Taran shrank back as the once haughty queen raised her head. For an instant he saw her eyes flame again with pride and fury.
"You have destroyed me, Gwydion," she cried. "Do you hope to see me grovel at your feet? Are my powers indeed stripped away?"
Akran laughed harshly.
"One last remains to me."
It was then Taran saw she held a weathered branch of driftwood. She lifted it high, and Taran gasped, as in her hands it blurred and shimmered. Suddenly in its place was a dagger. With a shout of triumph, Akran plunged it toward her own breast. Gwydion sprang to her and seized her wrists. Akran fought against him as he tore the blade from her grasp. Once more, the dagger became driftwood, which Gwydion snapped in two and cast away. Akron fell sobbing to the sand.
"Your enchantments have ever been the enchantments of death," said Gwydion.
He knelt and gently placed a hand on her shoulder.
"Seek life, Akron."
"No life remains to me but that of an outcast," cried Akron, turning from him. "Leave me to myself." Gwydion nodded.
"Find your own path, Akron," he said softly. "Should it lead you to Caer Dalban, know this. Dalban will not turn you away."
The sky had grown heavy with clouds, and though it was little past midday, the high crags rising at the shore seemed purple with dusk. Gergi had built a fire of driftwood, and the companions sat silently near the sleeping Ailanwi. Farther down the beach, Akron, muffled in her cloak, crouched alone and unmoving. For all that morning, Taran had not left Ailanwi's side. Fearful she might never wake, and fearful, too, that she might waken as a stranger to him still, he did not rest from his weary vigil. Gwydion himself could not foretell how long-lasting was the harm that had been done her.
"Do not lose heart," Gwydion said. "It is good that she sleeps, and more healing to her spirit than any potion I could give her."
Ailanwi stirred restlessly. Taran started up. Gwydion put a hand on his arm and gently drew him back. Ailanwi's eyelids fluttered. Gwydion, his face grave, watched closely as her eyes opened and she slowly raised her head. Chapter 20. The Pledge. The princess sat up and looked curiously at the companions.
"Ailanwi," Taran whispered, "do you know us?"
"Taran of Caer Dalban," said Ailanwi. "Only an assistant pig-keeper could ask a question like that. Of course I know you. What I don't know is what I'm doing soaking wet and covered with sand on this beach."
Gwydion smiled.
"The Princess Ailanwi has come back to us."
Gergi shouted with joy, and in that instant Taran, Fluda, and Prince Roon began talking all at once. Ailanwi clapped her hands over her ears.
"Stop, stop," she cried. "You're making my head swim. Listening to you is more confusing than trying to count your fingers and toes at the same time."
The companions forced themselves to be silent, while Gwydion quickly told her all that had happened. When he had finished, Ailanwi shook her head.
"I can see you had a much more interesting time than I had," she said, scratching Lian's chin as the immense cat purred with pleasure, "especially since I don't recall much of it."
"Too bad that Mag escaped,"
Ailanwi went on. "I wish he were here now. I should have a few things to take up with him. That morning when I was on my way to breakfast, he came looming out of one of the corridors. He told me something very serious had happened, and I was to come with him immediately."
"If only we could have warned you," Taran began.
"Warned me?" Ailanwi replied. "Of Mag? I knew straight off from the very look of him he was up to something."
Taran stared at her.
"And yet you went with him?"
"Naturally," said Ailanwi. "How else was I going to find out? You were so busy sitting in front of my chamber and threatening to have a guard put round me. I knew there was no use trying to get any sense out of you."
"Do not judge him harshly," said Gwydion, smiling. "He thought only to protect you. He was under my orders to do so."
"Yes, I realize that," said Ailanwi, "and I soon began to wish all of you had been with me. By then it was too late. We'd no sooner got clear of the castle than Mag tied me up and gagged me. That was the worst of it. I couldn't speak a word." "But it spoiled his own scheme," she went on. "He had indeed waited in the hills until the searching party was far ahead of us. Then he dragged me into the boat. His shins will be black and blue for a while to come, I assure you. But I dropped my bauble. Since I was gagged, I couldn't make him understand I wanted it back. But it served him right. Akron was furious when she saw I didn't have it. She blamed Mag, and I'm surprised she didn't have his head off then and there. To me, she was very sweet and thoughtful, so I knew right away something disagreeable was to come. After that,
Ailanwy continued. Akran cast a spell over me, and I remember very little. Until the bauble was in my hands once more. Then it was very strange. In the light of it, I could see all of you. Not with my eyes, really, but in my heart. I knew you wanted me to destroy the spells, and I wanted to, as much as you did. Yet, it was as though they were two of me. One did, and one didn't want to give up the spells. I knew it was my only chance to become an enchantress, and if I gave up my powers, then that would be the end of it. I suppose, she said softly to Taran, I felt a little the way you did long ago in the marshes of Morva, when you had to decide to give up Adean's magic brooch. The rest of it wasn't pleasant, Alarma's voice faltered. I'd rather not talk about that. She was silent a moment. Now I shall never be an enchantress. There's nothing left for me now, except being a girl.
That is more than enough cause for pride, Gwydion said gently. For all you chose to sacrifice, you have kept Akron from ruling Prydain. We owe more than our lives to you.
I'm glad the Book of Spells burned up, Ailanwy said, but I'm sorry I lost my bauble. By this time it surely floated far out to sea. She sighed. There's nothing to be done about that, but I shall miss it. As she spoke, Taran glimpsed a flickering movement against the dark grey sky. He leapt to his feet. It was Kor, swooping landward at top speed.
"The last of our strays!" cried Fluda.
Lian's ears pricked up, her long whiskers twitched, but she made no attempt to lunge for the crow. Instead, she rose to her haunches and purred fondly at the sight of her former opponent. His feathers bedraggled and pointing every which way, Kor fluttered above Ailanwy. Despite his disreputable appearance, he squawked and snapped his beak with enormous self-satisfaction.
"Bauble!"
Kor croaked.
"Bauble!"
From his claws, the golden peladrin dropped into Ailanwy's outstretched hands. Gwydion at first had decided the companions should rest until morning, but Prince Roon was eager to return to Dinas Ridnant.
"There's a great deal to be done," he said. "I'm afraid we've let Mag look after things we should have seen to ourselves. There's more to being a prince than I thought. I've learned that from an assistant pig-keeper," he added, clasping Taran's hand, "and from all of you. And there's still most of Mona to be seen. If I'm ever to be king, I'm sure I should see it all, though I hope in a rather different way. So if you don't mind, I should like to set out now."
Gergi had no wish to linger anywhere near Caer Calor, and Fluda could hardly wait to show Lian her new home in his own realm. Ailanwy insisted she was quite able to travel, and at last Gwydion agreed they would start without delay. He agreed, too, that they would pass by the cavern to see how Glue fared, for Taran still held to the promise he had made to help the wretched giant. The ragged band made ready to leave the coast. Akron, finally consenting to voyage to Caer Dalban, walked slowly, withdrawn into her own thoughts, while Lian frisked beside the bard and Kor sported overhead. Ailanwy had gone for a moment to the edge of the surf. Taran, following her, stood as she watched the dancing waves.
"I thought I should have a last look at Caer Calor," Ailanwy said, "just to remember where it is. Or rather, where it isn't. I'm sorry in a way that it's gone. Outside of Caer Dalban, it was the only home I had."
"Once you are safe at Dinas Ridnant," Taran said, "I shall stay no longer on Mona. I had hoped, after all you'd been through, that you'd come back with us. But Gwydion is sure that Dalban meant for you to stay here. I suppose he's right. I can hear Dalban now. Being rescued has nothing to do with being educated." Ailanwy said nothing for a while. Then she turned to Taran.
"One thing I remembered at Caer Calor, Dalban saying that there was a time when we must be more than what we are. Can it be true that being a young lady is more important than being an enchantress? Perhaps that's what he meant. I shall have to find out for myself. So if I must learn to be a young lady, whatever that may be that's any different from what I am," Ailanwy continued, Then I shall try to learn twice as fast as those silly geese at Dinas Ridnant, and be home twice as soon. For Caer Dalban is my only real home now.
Why, what's this?
Ailanwy cried suddenly.
The sea has given us a present.
She knelt, and from the foaming surf drew a battered object, and stripped away the trailing seaweed. Taran saw an ancient battle horn, bound in silver, with a silver mouthpiece. Ailanwy turned it over in her hands, and looked carefully at it. She smiled sadly.
It's all that's left of Caer Calore. What use it might be, I don't know, and never shall. But if you promise not to forget me until we meet again, I promise not to forget you, and this shall be my pledge.
I promise gladly, Taran said. He hesitated. But what pledge have I to give you? I have none other than my word.
The word of an assistant peak-keeper, said Ailanwy. That shall do very well indeed. Here, take it. Giving gifts is much nicer than saying farewell.
And yet, Taran answered, we must say farewell. You know that King Rudlam and Queen Teleria mean to betroth you to Prince Roon.
Indeed, exclaimed Ailanwy. Well, I assure you they shall do no such thing. There's limits to having people make up your mind for you. Roon has certainly improved. I think this journey was the best thing that ever happened to him, and some day he might even make a respectable sort of king. But as for being betrothed...
She stopped suddenly and looked at Taran.
Did you seriously think for a moment I would ever... Taran of Caer Dalban, she cried angrily, her eyes flashing. I'm not speaking to you. At least, Ailanwy added quickly, not for a little while.
This is James Langton. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged listening library production of The Prydain Chronicles, Volume 3, The Castle of Lear, by Lloyd Alexander. This program was produced and directed by John McElroy. Executive producer, Dan Zitt. Text copyright, 1966, by Lloyd Alexander. Production copyright, 2004, by Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.